John Horgan here on the unceded territory of the Lekwungen speaking people, Esquimalt and Songhees First Nation. And I say that acknowledgement not just because it's appropriate to do so, but because from day one, my government has been focused on reconciliation, environmental protection, and building an economy that works for everyone. No sector is more important to the history and the future of British Columbia than our forest sector. I was here last week with Minister Conroy talking about our intentions paper for the broader forest industry, interior, coastal, old growth, second growth, how we build a value-based industry where we can keep more communities intact and continue to have that success now and in the future. That does not change a past that has been focused on over many, many decades, decisions that have been made by successive governments on public lands to alienate those lands from the traditional title holders, Indigenous people, and also to not connect those trees, those forests, to the people that live in them. We're going to change that. We've made it abundantly clear since we were sworn in 2017, and the steps we've taken since September, when we received the old growth report by Foresters Gourlay and Merkel, that we will implement all of the recommendations contained therein. But our forests are not just old growth, they're not just coastal, they're in every part of this great province. And managing those lands is the responsibility of government and title holders together. I was very proud to receive a declaration from the Huayat, the Dididat, and the Pachidat people earlier in the week, outlining their views and their vision for activity in their territories. Today, Cabinet has approved a request by the Pachidat to defer old growth foresting, old growth forestry in Ferry Creek, as well as the Central Wallbrae. This is critically important. Important for a number of reasons. Most importantly, that we have allowed, as a province, the title holders to make decisions on their land. You remember back in September, the province put aside deferred 200,000 hectares of old growth right across the province. And at that time, the Central Wallbrae was going to be part of that deferral process. But at the time, the Pachidat said to government they were not yet ready to defer that territory. So we removed that from the inventory, had a dialogue, allowed the Pachidat to do their planning, to look at their needs over the long term. And I was very pleased to see that along with Ferry Creek, they also requested that the 2,000 hectares within the Central Wallbrae would also be deferred for the next 2 years while planning could be undertaken. These are monumental steps. I know it appears at the moment to be just another announcement by another premier. Well, these announcements are transformative for an industry that has been foundational to British Columbia's success and will be foundational to our future success. But it has to be done in a different way. It has to take into consideration the ravages of climate change. We've seen the impact of the mountain pine beetle to our interior forests. We've seen successive fire seasons that have been more horrific than the one before. All of this is a result of climate change. And our old majestic forests are at greater risk because of the size and the lack of water we're seeing spring after spring as we go through these changes and how British Columbia and indeed the world responds to climate action. So today I'm proud to have deferred these territories at the request of the title holders, and I'm very excited about the deferrals that will be coming later in the summer and all through the implementation of our old growth plan. I want British Columbians to understand absolutely clearly we are doing things differently in British Columbia. This is not your grandparents' forest industry. It will be your grandchildren's forest industry if we manage it correctly. Working with Indigenous people, working with communities, working with those who are on the land right now, making a living for themselves and adding economic vitality to their area of the province. All of those things can be done if we work together. All of those things can be done if we respect the wishes of title holders, we work within the rules that all of us want to operate under, where we save these special areas, and we work on the land to create wealth for all British Columbians. Happy to take some questions.
Thank you. As a reminder to everybody on the phone, please press star 1 to enter the queue. You'll be limited to one question and one follow-up only. First question today is from Justine Hunter, Globe and Mail.
Thank you. And Premier, I'm hoping at some point you're going to give us an idea of exactly where these deferrals are, because I think that the question of what happens with protests is going to depend on exactly how much land is being set aside. But beyond that, you said we have allowed the title holders on their lands, and I'm wondering what your decision means today for the rest of the province where Indigenous nations wish to exercise their sovereignty over resource development on their lands.
Well, we unanimously passed the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in our legislature. It's called the Declaration Act, and we are implementing that. Free, prior, and informed consent doesn't just mean I don't want things to happen. It also means I want things to happen. And that certainty on the land base across the province, I think, will be advantageous to industry, to investment, and most importantly, to communities and to workers. With respect to the maps, the order was just passed in Cabinet today. Those orders will come out. The maps will be abundantly clear. It's in total 2,000 hectares of old growth. I think it's an accumulation of a bit more than 2,000 when you add in the second growth that's contained within those areas. But those will be made available, I'm sure, shortly after I finish talking to you today, if not as I'm talking to you.
Justine, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you. Premier, it took your government just a couple of days to accept this plan that was, I think, tabled formally with you on Monday. There are other First Nations who have requested old growth logging deferrals. I'm wondering if you plan to also swiftly recognize their right to determine the parameters of logging in their territories, or do they need to see these kind of mass arrests and conflicts before they get that kind of response time?
Well, we're going to respond as quickly as we can to requests from Indigenous communities, requests from industry. There's a whole host of stakeholders, as you know full well, Justine. We responded to the requests from the Pachidat. We've been working on this for some time, as I say, going back to September when we adopted all of the recommendations in the Gourlay-Merkel report. We said we were going to consult with title holders and defer more areas of the province. A technical briefing wasn't available today because the minister is in budget estimates. Her team is with her. But the information that you're looking for with respect to maps will be made available to you as quickly as I can. But this is a positive day for not just the Pachidat, the Huayat, and the Didadat, but it's a good day for British Columbia because we are embarking on the journey to transform forestry. This is in everyone's interest. It's in the interest of those majestic forests and the biodiversity that depends on it. It's in the interest of industry because they can have certainty. And, of course, it's in the interest of communities because we're going to attach forests to communities, not to shareholders.
Next question is from Richard Zussman, Global News.
So, Premier, do you anticipate, Justine alluded to protests, do you anticipate that this deferral will end the ongoing protests at Ferry Creek?
I'm hopeful that those who have taken to the roads of Southern Vancouver Island will understand that this process is not one that can happen overnight. I know that people have been passionate about forests for as long as I've been walking on this earth, and I've been in Southern Vancouver Island for most of that time. I've visited the Walbrand, I've visited the Big Cedar at Chiwatts, I've been in majestic forests. I understand the importance of preserving these areas. But I also understand that you can't turn on a dime when you're talking about an industry that has been the foundation of BC's economy. I know the majority of British Columbians understand this is a long process. I'm hopeful more will join that majority view that we can preserve these forests as we've done today with Ferry Creek and with the Central Walbrand, but we have to work together with everybody, not just the loudest voice, but with everybody.
Richard, do you have a follow-up?
Just switching topics, Manitoba has announced that they are going to have a lottery to encourage people to get vaccinated. I know this is a question that's been asked of yourself and Dr. Henry and Minister Dix, but would the province consider creating some sort of incentives as it gets harder to convince people around first doses, especially younger people? Yes, we're closing in on 80%, but that means there's 20% of the population that still needs some sort of boost to get that shot.
Well, I think education and information is our best tool at this point in time. As you know, we have very positive outcomes when it comes to first doses. I talked to Dr. Ballum yesterday, who's coordinating the immunization plan. We need more vaccine. I've made that clear to the Prime Minister. He understands that. This is a piece of technology, these vaccines that are in high demand, and we don't produce them domestically. So we have a challenge there procuring enough supply. I'm confident that we will be able to achieve our objectives without incentives, but we haven't ruled that out. Other jurisdictions may feel they need to do that today. We continue to see people registering. We continue to see people getting booked for not just their first shot, but the lineup for second shots is second doses is very, very high. And Dr. Ballum and Dr. Henry have worked on this for some time. It's going very, very well. I don't want to jinx it, but I do believe that we can get to our objectives without incentives. But if it comes to that, we're not going to rule that out. Not at all.
Rob Shaw, Czech News.
Hi, Premier. Is there any cost associated with this, either to government or in compensation to Teal Jones, that you know of in making your decision today, and any other ramifications in terms of the potential financial or job or impacts that might come with this?
Well, I know that the job impacts are modest in this area. It is a non-compensable deferral, which is what the Forest Minister can do under the Act. But over time, there will be costs to moving in this direction. But those are going to be dollars well spent to ensure that we can distribute tenures in a more effective way to get more jobs out of the land base, to make sure that we're focusing on adding more value. You've heard me say this, Rob, many, many times before. I'll continue to say it. We are on a path that BC has not been on ever. We're changing the way we do business on the land, and that is hard work, and it's going to take people cooperating and listening to each other as we go forward. And the foundation of that, however, is the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and that was a result of rooms full of case law that made it abundantly clear that rights and title exist in British Columbia. The best way to manage that and create certainty is to work together, and that's what we're doing.
Follow-up, Rob?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm just looking at the map and the zones that are identified and trying to sort of compare them to what the protesters have in their maps and their zones. And I guess to build on Richard's question, what would you say to people who are, you know, standing there fighting a larger fight for the protection of old growth that may not be resolved today with this map and these two zones A and B and the kind of areas that you've laid out?
Well, I listened to members in the legislature talk about this as the last stand. There are no others of more greater importance than this. I disagree with that. There are majestic forests all across British Columbia. They're not all massively large cedar trees. There are unique forests in the interior that need protection as well. They may not be as gigantic as the giants we see here in the island and on the coast, but the forests of British Columbia are diverse. The forests of British Columbia, they keep biodiversity where it needs to be. We're going to focus on that. There are going to be people who will say, I'm fairly confident, not good enough. And I anticipate that. But I also know that most British Columbians understand and recognize that the types of changes we're talking about, and I can't lean into that hard enough. There have been generations of discussions going back well before Clackwit, going into the 1980s, into the 1970s, quite frankly, where people have been demanding change on the land base. We're delivering that change, but we can't do it overnight. Commissioner Merkel's been pretty clear on that. He did the report. I'll remind people that if they've not read the Gourlay-Merkel report, they should. If they have not fully absorbed the recommendations that we have embraced, they should, because the primary recommendation is to work with title holders, as we have with the Pachidat, the Didadat, and the Huayat, to come up to a compromise that meets their needs in the long term, as well as the needs of these majestic forests. The people, the caretakers of these lands for millennia, do not want to see them despoiled. They want to manage them as they have for centuries, and I think it's appropriate that we let them do that.
Next question is from Greg Rasmussen, CBC.
Premier, you know, as you just touched on, people have been talking about this since the 1970s, and we hear a lot of the same language from government, from the protest side, from First Nations. Do you have a date in mind for all this? And, you know, because people are saying that the end game here is the halt of old growth logging in British Columbia. It's a finite resource on the island. They say 90% plus has been logged. What year will old growth logging end in British Columbia?
We're going to follow the roadmap that was laid out by Gourlay and Merkel. We've embraced the recommendations. It was a thoughtful report. It was lauded at the time by stakeholders across the piece, whether they be from industry, from the environmental movement. I believe that's an appropriate roadmap. It was hard to put it together, and it's going to be hard to implement it. But if we focus on it, industry, workers, communities, environmental organizations, we can get there. I'm not going to put a date on it. That's a recipe for failure. I want success, and I believe success rests on the road that we travel together. Indigenous people, workers, environmentalists, communities, industry investors, to make sure we can get this right. There is a bright future for forestry if we focus on adding more value, not just liquidating our forests and waiting for something else to replace it. I think this is the way forward, as do the Pachitat, the Didadat, and the Huayat.
Greg, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I guess one other question is the impact on the company here. Have you had any discussions with them about the impact either on jobs or I know the deferral process is a long one, but do you expect any immediate impact in terms of jobs in the Cowichan, Lake Cowichan area?
I don't believe the impact will be significant. The Minister of Forests will probably be getting those questions right now in the legislature as she debates her budget estimates. But I can say that the current deferrals are not compensable, but over time they will be. And that's part and parcel of our intentions paper, going back to the building blocks that we've been putting in place since we were sworn in as a government back in 2017. We've been trying to put in place the framework for the changes that people want to see. And I believe we've done a pretty good job of putting in place the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I think we've done a pretty good job of making sure that the tenure holders understand the expectations from the people who own the resources, that being the people of British Columbia, and also understanding that we need to make sure that workers can continue to support their families wherever they may live. I believe the elements are there, and I'm confident that if we all focus and work together, we can get to the end of the day where we have majestic forests for generations to come. We have people that can work on the land base, whether they be Indigenous or non-Indigenous, to create wealth and opportunity so that our province can prosper. That's the end game. That's our objective, and I believe the foundation pieces are there. There'll be legislation to come to implement the intentions paper. Discussions are underway, not just with the tenure holder in this area, but right across the piece. But tenure was disrupted and turned upside down in 2004 by the former BC Liberal government. We've been trying to play catch up, quite frankly, since then, and that's why it's taken us 4 years to get to this place.
Lisa Houston, News 1130.
Hi, Premier. Changing to COVID borders. With the federal government moving to ease restrictions for Canadians, permanent residents, if they make the next step to move to allow tourists sooner than BC had intended by September, but they do it over the summer, what would you like that to look like?
Well, we are in discussions with the federal government on their plans to relieve restrictions at the border. I'm in regular contact, as you know, with Governor Inslee to the south of us on the land border. Of course, that would affect our marine entry points as well. And I just finished a call with Senator Murkowski from Alaska about the issues that she sees as problematic with Canada, not with British Columbia, but with Canada. And I'll relay those to the Prime Minister when I get the opportunity next week. But I'm confident that we're on the right track. I know the case counts are very favorable. Hospitalizations are down, immunizations are up. These are all of the objectives that we laid out in our restart plan. We'll have more to say next week about going to the next stage. Again, I'll be working with Ottawa at the officials level as well as face-to-face as we do this with premiers across the country to find that common position. But it's important to know that not every jurisdiction across the country has the same view on this matter. Some want to open up tomorrow. Others don't want to open up until September. I think somewhere between those two poles is where we'll land, the quintessential Canadian compromise, I suspect. And it's carried us as a nation this far, and I'm hopeful that it'll carry us through the end of the pandemic.
Follow up, Lisa.
And if the border opens before September, that is not what BC had planned, what would you like it to look like, and how will you feel about that? Are you okay with that, or would that be distressing?
Well, our job is to be prepared for any eventuality. Again, these are issues that are beyond our control. The borders are the responsibility of the federal government. I have said in the past, and I'll continue to say, there was disappointment at the front end of the pandemic, but we've had a very collaborative relationship to this point in time, and I don't expect it will change. So as we work on how we can best look towards a reopening,
I'll be there to talk to the Prime Minister and his team about that. Our focus is to make sure that we get to the middle of June and the next stage in our restart plan, and then, of course, getting to Canada Day, where we hope that we can have even more restrictions relieved as we see positive outcomes on cases. And certainly, again, the pace with which we've been able to vaccinate people is just astonishing when you consider the magnitude of this undertaking. And I'm very confident British Columbians are all on the same page here. They want to get to a place where we can welcome the world back to British Columbia, but we want to make sure we get all of the steps right. And that's why our plan, I think, has been widely applauded across sectors, because it gives a roadmap for people to start planning around. And I suspect we'll be inviting people here before September, but I can't pick a date. All I know is that all of the indications are positive at this point, and British Columbians need to keep with it, keep following the guidelines that are currently in place, and hopefully we'll be relieving them again next week, and then again further into July, 1st of July.
Rob Buffum, CTVBI.
Oh, hi, Premier. My question also relates to the borders. You've answered much of it, but I wondered if, in light of the federal government's announcement that they plan for early July to have Canadians could leave the country and come back without quarantining, that may put a dent in staycation revenue if people can go, you know, cross the border for a vacation. Would you be motivated to help the tourism industry locally by, you know, pushing the Prime Minister, when you speak to him next, to have the borders open for fully vaccinated, negative testing tourists to come here?
Well, again, those are discussions that are happening at the officials level. We're going to continue to be very vocal at that table. We have tourism interests here in British Columbia that are very, very important to our well-being as a province, and, of course, to the people who operate, whether it be attractions, whether they be guides, whether they be part of the hospitality sector. More people means more opportunity. We have such abundance and such splendor in British Columbia. We want the world to come here, but we want to make sure we do it on our terms. British Columbians have worked really hard to get to where we are with respect to case counts and hospitalizations and all of the sacrifices that have been made. We don't want to throw those away just for a couple of tourists to come earlier than we have anticipated. I would encourage British Columbians, when the travel restrictions are lifted, presumably next week, and further relief on restrictions come July 1, that they go and visit those parts of British Columbia that they haven't been able to get to until now. You won't have competition from international travelers. This is an opportunity to support your community or those communities that depend on tourism, and also get a world-class view of some of the many attractions that attract visitors from around the world, or did pre-pandemic, and they will post-pandemic as well.
Follow-up, Rob?
I do. I know you've been asked about this previously, but I know other provinces, including Manitoba, are now looking at vaccine passports in light of the importance of having two shots that we've all recognized. Do you have any new thoughts on a domestic passport for people who have had two vaccines that might, you know, relate to the ability to travel around the country or spots within the province?
We haven't landed on that issue. We're not enthusiastic about it, quite frankly. This is private health information at the end of the day. And when we look at the data, it's clear that the vast majority of British Columbians are enthusiastic, almost 75% first doses. For those 18 and older, that's just quite extraordinary. And we have many, many more that are registered and have not yet had their first dose. So we're confident that we're going to get into the 85-90% range without incentives, without concerns about accessing the particular vaccine that someone would be looking for if they're shopping for vaccines. In that sense, I've said already that I plan to get an AstraZeneca second dose if it's available to me. And that, I think, is what most British Columbians are thinking about right now. When it comes to businesses, they're going to have to think about this, and we are collaborating with them through the various tables that we've established to see what they believe is practical in order to operate their business and also have some confidence that they're doing their part to keep cases down low once we get into a period of time where more and more people are traveling, more and more people are engaging in commerce than we've seen over the past number of months. So we haven't landed on a local immunization passport. I'm uncomfortable with the notion of requiring people to do that. We have not made vaccinations mandatory. Businesses make their own choices. No shirt, no shoes, no service. Everyone's seen that sign, whether you've got shirts or shoes or service. So there are some personal questions here, and I'm confident that common sense will prevail. I'm hopeful that common sense will prevail.
We have time for one more question. Nelson Bennett, Business in Vancouver.
Yeah, so just to be clear, there's two areas there that are basically part of a two-year moratorium, the Wellbrand and the Ferry Creek area. But that doesn't mean that all logging is going to be halted in that general region, does it? Because, and the reason I ask is that the press release that the Didat and Patchadat and Huayat put out a few days ago did suggest that some logging will continue. Can you just clarify that?
Sure. All three nations have logging interests. All three nations have second growth in their territory that they'll continue to harvest. But the areas of specific concern to the commissioners, whether it be Commissioner Gourlay, Commissioner Merkel, were the Central Wellbrand and Ferry Creek. Those deferrals have been requested by the title holders, and we've deferred old growth logging in those territories. There will be logging taking place in southern Vancouver Island, and that's why the job impacts are not as significant as they would be otherwise, because there are areas that have been harvested once, sometimes twice, and that'll continue. But those decisions are going to be made based on the rules of engagement with the province, as well as the needs and desires of the title holders.
Follow-up, Nelson?
Okay, thank you. No, that's good, thanks.
Great, thank you. That's all the time we have. Thank you
Great.
For joining
thanks.
Us.